All right, welcome back to the lineup. I'm joined this time, instead of Josh Goldman, who visited us for the last episode, joined by my regular co-host, Pete LeClede, who's in Las Vegas, Nevada right now, but prepping to hop on a flight tomorrow to San Jose to watch the beginning of March Madness. You ready for that flight, Pete?
Oh, man, it is so exciting. You know how big on college basketball I am, so I'm going to get a little madness at home watching some of the early games, fly out, watch my beloved Hokies playing a tournament game. It's going to be a quick trip, but it's going to be worth it. But happy madness to you, my friend. We're like a week away from the actual regular season of baseball starting.
I know.
The A's and the Mariners are actually playing games that matter right now.
It's pretty exciting. In Japan, it's the Ichiro Farewell Tour. Were you up early watching any of those games? For you, I think that must have been like 4 a.m. this morning, right?
No, actually, as I was going to bed last night, they were talking about it would come on in a few hours.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
I caught the highlights when I got to work early this morning. But yeah, man, it's hard to believe we're back. You and I have taken a little break when baseball was off. It's good to be back. We're back on our regular schedule now, so you guys can expect to see us in your normal podcast feeds under the lineup. It's good to be back, my friend.
Love it. Yeah, I'm a little bit sad about this Japan series as well, though, because this is the Ichiro Farewell Tour. And most of the speculation from the analysts I've been listening to is that the Mariners are going to let Ichiro go after they get back. And that's an end of an era. He's 45 years old. He's been playing professional baseball since he started out playing in the Japanese professional league at age 18. So this guy has had quite a career. I mean, I can't imagine playing baseball for 27 years professionally. That's insane. 27 years.
I know. And you think of the incredible things he did in Seattle statistically, and also what he was able to do for Japanese players in the major leagues. But it makes you wonder, like we talk about Ohtani wanting to play on the West Coast, and we talk about Ichiro playing on the West Coast. You wonder if these guys had gotten East earlier on in their careers, how much that would have changed their persona. I mean, who knows what the results would have been, obviously. But you wonder, Ichiro kind of flew under the radar for a long time out there. He was just a solid performer day in, day out, all-star, but never the big name in baseball. You wonder if he'd gone to the Yankees 5 years earlier, he played in Boston or Washington or Philadelphia, what could have been for old Ichiro?
Yeah, I totally agree. At the same time, though, I think playing in a smaller market like Seattle that's on the West Coast, so there's the connection, or at least closer time zone-wise, to Japan, I think that benefits Ichiro in a way.
And yes,
fans in Seattle, I think, are much more forgiving than fans are in New York or certainly Philadelphia, Boston perhaps, although I think Boston seems to hold on to its heroes pretty well. But I think that Ichiro's career really has fared well for being in Seattle. And I think that, I'm guessing, this is totally speculative, it's not like I'm friends with the guy, but I'm guessing that he wouldn't have it any other way if he could go back and do it all over again.
Yeah, I agree. I hope Ohtani gets the same treatment in Anaheim for a long time going forward, similar to Ichiro.
Problem with Ohtani in Los Angeles is that he's overshadowed, and now we know will be overshadowed in Los Angeles for a long time by Mike Trout.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call that overshadow, though, right? I mean, he can complement, I would argue, the most exciting player of our generation now. And I think based on his personality, I mean, look at Ichiro. He never seemed to want, obviously, you and I aren't friends with him, like you said.
Right.
They never seemed to want to be the number one guy in the spotlight. They just wanted to perform, get it done, and be part of the team.
Which
so
is exactly how Mike Trout is as well, yeah. I mean, maybe it will be easier for two guys who are superstars performance-wise, Ohtani and Trout, but are not superstars persona-wise, maybe it will be easier for them to coexist. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think of players like Albert Pujols in Anaheim, and maybe those guys can do some great mentoring and coaching with those young players and teach them how to play the game. And you look at the impact Albert had in St. Louis. You look at the impact he's had in Anaheim, in the community, not as much towards the team here in Anaheim, but in the community. Maybe he can build a culture out there, and that can be part of Albert Pujols' legacy is some of those young guys.
That's a good point. Well, speaking of personality-driven players or player personality profiles, I was listening to a podcast earlier today from The Ringer MLB show, and one of those commentators, Michael Bauman, who also writes for The Ringer, described Derek Jeter as one of these guys who always needs to be front and center of whatever baseball organization he's been in. Would you agree with that from his days as a player?
I never got that impression during interviews that he was that he was making himself the number one guy. I think the Yankees absolutely did that to him because they wanted to hang on to him as a star and make him kind of the icon of New York.
Yeah.
But I think I disagree with that based on the way he presented himself in interviews. I know we've all read the exposés on how Derek Jeter lives his life off the baseball field and how he's an aggressively single guy out there kind of doing his thing. But I never got the impression that he was trying to make himself bigger than the Yankees. I think he was trying to match the Yankees persona right. by being the captain in pinstripes. Yeah. I think I disagree with that a little.
I think that's exactly right. I think you nailed it. Yeah, I heard that. And he said he described Harper the same way, and he compared Harper and Jeter. And I mean, I like Harper, especially now that he's a Philly. I have to like Harper, but I think that Harper and Jeter are very different people, and the way that their personas come across are very different as well.
Yeah, you and Josh had obviously a great discussion about Bryce here when you guys recorded last week. I also don't get the impression that Bryce tries to make himself bigger than a franchise. I am sad to see Bryce go. I know that he's a brash guy. I know he took a lot of flack in the media as a young guy, running into walls, breaking baseball bats on the sides of dugouts. I think he's passionate, and sure. I don't think here in 2019 we know how to deal with passionate players, because we write it off as these guys can't control their emotions and are trying to be a one-man band. And I mean, look, whenever LeBron gets emotional in Los Angeles, we immediately say that he's trying to be bigger than the team, or look at any of these players in the National Football League. I don't think we understand passion anymore as fans, which is hilarious because we're the most passionate people out
there. That's true, yeah.
But I never thought of Bryce as trying to be bigger than the Nationals. I disagreed with the way he and Scott Boras ran that contract towards the end, but I never got the feeling like he was trying to overshadow the other guys in the clubhouse. And I never read any about that in the Washington Post either, that they thought Bryce was trying to put himself on an island. Bryce was trying to, like you said, establish roots, get paid, and be an all-star. I never thought it was at the to sacrifice the Nationals' progression.
Right.
So I think you can be more optimistic than that with him in Philly now.
Yeah. How disappointed do you think Bryce is now that Mike Trout got a much bigger contract than him?
Yeah.
And B, that it looks like there's less of a chance that Trout would end up coming to Philly anytime soon.
Yeah, I think he's got to be more disappointed in Mike Trout staying in Anaheim for 12 years, right? It was a 12-year contract. Bryce got a 13.
Yeah, $430 million, 12 years.
He's got to be disappointed about that. And I have to imagine, obviously, you know this beat so much better than I do. The city of Philadelphia has to be a little disappointed with how often he's at Eagles games.
Yeah, I mean,
how
much he's from New Jersey. He grew up a Philly sports fan. He goes to all the games. He's such a natural fit for the city, and I think his attitude would be great in the city as well, and the fans would absolutely adore him. He would instantly become a Philly sports legend, but instead he signs a 12-year contract to stay in Los Angeles, and not even with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
It's strange. I mean, nothing against the Angels, but I don't understand why anybody would willingly want to spend 12 years with them. Although I guess if you were to give me, you know, $36 million a year to do it, I also would agree to be in Los Angeles for 12 years.
I was reading a great article on Hardball a couple days ago about this, and they talked about that Mike Trout and the Angels haven't done a lot of things right while Mike Trout has been there, but what the Angels have been very good about doing with him, and he has reciprocated, is complete and total honesty and transparency between the two. That unlike the Cubs with Chris Bryant, where they left him in the minors for a while, I mean, we talk about all these teams. Look at what they're going to do with Vlad Guerrero here in Toronto as we get into our AL East preview. They're going to leave him in the minors long enough for the contract and then pull him up. The Angels never did that with Mike Trout.
Right.
The second he was ready for the majors, they brought him up. They made him the guy. They were always open to talking about new contracts. They made it very clear that they wanted to build around him. You can argue how effective they are at building. But overall, I think that has been a good relationship, unlike what we've seen with really every other major contract recently in sports. But I think it's so interesting that Bryce talked about wanting Mike Trout to get there, going back to our earlier point. That's the kind of thing that tells me that Bryce just wants to win.
Yeah.
Because he absolutely would have been overshadowed by Mike Trout, a dude who is superior to him in every statistic right now, who would be the favorite son of Philadelphia. He wants that guy to come into Philly and be next to him instead of letting him be the big dog all the time.
Right.
So maybe I'm just nostalgic for Bryce, but I think that those two guys are two of our better team players out there than we give them credit for.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, should we go ahead and get started with this MLB season preview? I was thinking we could start with National League this episode. Next episode, we'll do American League. But Josh and I, on our last episode, already talked about the National League East in the context of Bryce's move to Philadelphia. So we'll skip the National League East. Although I do want to ask you, do you agree with the rankings that we had for the competitiveness of the teams in the East?
I did. So obviously, Josh and I think very similarly on the Nationals and text about it pretty frequently. You talked me into believing in the Nationals.
All right, great.
I'm still very high on Philadelphia going forward. I think watching where they were last year, where we expected them to be, that team in 3 to 4 years, I think is going to be as electric as what Boston and New York were last year. I really think that they can get there much quicker than we thought. There is something I disagreed with, though. I think you guys kind of scoffed our interactions with Nigel Morgan when he was playing center field for the Nationals. I think Josh kind of downplayed that a little. Let the record show, we were pretty mean to Nigel Morgan. We felt kind of bad about it in the moment, and then he showed up in the Mitchell Report.
Oh, so boy.
It all came around, yep. And we were vindicated.
There we go.
But for the rest of it, yeah, I totally agree with you guys. Totally agree.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we'll skip the National League East. Josh and I had a discussion on that. If you want to listen to that, just go back to the previous episode and listen to that. So let's go with the National League Central. We have Chicago, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. And this is an interesting division, I think. Maybe the most interesting divisional race that we're going to see in baseball, Pete, because all of these teams are... I guess they just have big question marks around them. I'm not saying that any single one of them can win. I don't think Cincinnati can win the division. I think Pittsburgh, I don't really see Pittsburgh winning the division, but I can see Milwaukee, St. Louis, or the Cubs winning the division, and I think it's going to be really tight this year. I'll just sort of start off with some thoughts on the Cubs. I think they were 95-68 last season, and to me it seems like we might be seeing a repeat of the Theo Epstein effect, where he had a lot of success in Boston and was the folk hero after their World Series title. He brought the World Series back to the city, but then he fairly quickly fell out of favor again once Boston started losing. And this is the same thing I think that's happening in Chicago. The Cubs fans were very disappointed in last season's campaign, and the Cubs frankly underperformed. They lost to Milwaukee, right? And had an abysmal offseason and didn't go anywhere. So that is not what the Cubs fans are expecting from a recent Cubs fan or Cubs fan base that in 2016 won the World Series. So I don't know. And there's some interesting team dynamics as well going on here.
Yeah.
The Addison Russell domestic violence issue. He's suspended until early May, and lots of fans, I think, wish that he wasn't even on the team, because it's hard to root for someone on your team who's committed domestic violence. The Cubs pitching staff, I think, has a lot of question marks. Guys like John Lester, Kyle Hendricks, who was amazing in 2016, Cy Young level, but has never been able to come back to that. Jose Quintana, who I think is now no longer an up-and-coming pitching prospect. I mean, once you hit age 30 and you never quite materialized, people can't really say that you're up-and-coming. His ERA has been over 4 both of the past two seasons with the Cubs. Since he's been worse since he came from the White Sox. Yu Darvish was awful last season and injured most of it. And Cole Hamels, who, a Phillies great, a Rangers great, but certainly past his prime. So I think 3-4 years ago, that rotation would be fantastic, probably one of the best in the game. But now it's way past its prime, and I don't think it very well may not be enough to carry the Cubs to where they want to be by the end of the semester. Guys like Kyle Schwarber as well. Again, you know, the question is not about whether or not he can regain form. It's really about whether or not he can gain form. Can he live up to the promise that we've seen? He's another year older. So the Chicago Cubs, I think, have an uphill battle here. I do think they will be able to hold off Milwaukee and St. Louis down the stretch, but as we saw last year, that's not necessarily the case, especially if one of those teams gets hot at the close of the season. So that's my opening thought on Chicago and the picture of the National League Central. Do you have anything else on that, Pete?
Yeah, I think starting with the Cubs, you're right. It was a disappointing 2018. I'm hearing some rumors of this whole, like, no one believes in us Cubs mantra.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I think what you brought up about Theo is actually the most interesting thing for me going into the season this year. The lack of offseason moves out of Chicago, and granted, this was not a rebuilding process for Chicago, so you don't expect them to turn over half the roster. But, I mean, who did they bring in this year? They brought in Daniel Descalso, Brad Brock. I mean, they
really inspired choices. Yeah,
they didn't appear to be doing much. And I think what's got to be even more troubling if you're a Cubs fan right now is the great unknown with Joe Maddon. I mean, maybe this is part of Theo Epstein's grand plan to make Joe Maddon work for it. But they were in contract talks last year, and right now his contract expires at the end of this year. His hitting coach left in the offseason. I mean, you look at Davey Martinez going to Washington last year, and all these critical pieces towards getting the Cubs over the finish line in 2016 have walked away, like happens with so many championship teams, that assistant coaches are rewarded by being able to move on. But you wonder if Joe Maddon's lost a little of the magic. And you know, I'm not a great Joe Maddon fan. I think he's done some great things for the sport, but he tends to get a little gimmicky, I think, from time to time. And he's always trying to figure out kind of the latest and greatest trick to pull and keep everyone else guessing. I think that's part of his managerial style. I think he's kind of out of tricks in Chicago right now. And we're just going to rely on the team to try to make up for that. I mean, I think Chris Bryant will play more than the two-thirds of the season he played last year.
Yeah, I hope so. Baseball's better when Chris Bryant plays a full season.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think Yu Darvish will be back. I don't think he can have as bad of a season as he had last year, so that's got to be kind of an upside. And we still have guys like Anthony Rizzo, Javier Baez. I mean, we have a lot of great talent in Chicago. I just wonder if the glue that held that team together for so long is starting to wear off.
I think that's very possible. The Russell thing is a big wrench in that. Wilson Contreras really tailed off last year. Javi Baez had a great season, but I think there might be some regression to the mean there.
Yeah.
I'm wondering when we're going to see Anthony Rizzo start to tail off a little bit. And like I said, the big question marks for me are the rotation.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of question marks on the Cubs. Let's go to the Cardinals though. The rival of the Cubs in that division. I know you're a Cardinals fan. What do you think about the moves they made this offseason? The one that stands out to me, of course, is Goldschmidt.
Yeah,
he's one of the best hitters in the game, and I think he will do a lot to advance that club's chances of at least getting a wild card slot, perhaps even unseating the Cubs. But that's the big splashy signing of the offseason. It could make a difference, and I think you know they showed that they wanted to go get him. I'm not so sure about the value of the signing, just from a pure financial standpoint, because Goldschmidt, I think, is a free agent after this year, right? So he doesn't.
Yes, I believe so. I'd have to check.
Doesn't have much time left on his contract, so it's sort of a short-term rental unless they can get an extension worked out, which hopefully for Cardinals fans they will be able to. But I like that acquisition a lot. Apart from that, there's not a whole lot I think to be super excited about. But there is a solid lineup here. I mean, Carpenter, Goldschmidt, Ozuna, I think, is a good candidate for a bounce back campaign.
Yep.
Molina, DeJong.
Dexter Fowler has to get better this year.
Yeah, for sure. Colton Wong, he's sort of, you know, he's sort of perennially disappointed, but I still hold out hope that Wong will be a better than average second baseman.
Yeah.
So I think there's some promise there. What do you think?
I think what really stands out to me about this team is I agree that the offense is going to be pretty good. I think adding Goldie was huge out there in St. Louis. I have some very serious concerns about the starting rotation in St. Louis. I mean, you look at guys like Carlos Martinez, who's going to start the season on the DL. Michael Wacha is always injured. Adam Wainwright, I think he's about out of gas, which is to be expected after the great career that he's had. I think the bullpen is really, really good. You look at young guys like Jordan Hicks, and they're going to be just fine on the back end of that bullpen.
Jason Stark had a column in The Athletic about whether or not Jordan Hicks had the greatest fastball ever.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think if they can get to the back end of games with a lead, they're going to be just fine. I just don't have the confidence that the starting rotation can turn in a 2-3 run performance night in, night out. And they're going to have to rely on that offense to get them. I think 5 or 6 runs a night, honestly, to get to that backside of the bullpen. So I'm very, very nervous about the rotation. I think there's also a lot of pressure on this ball club in St. Louis. I think the GM, Mozeliak, I think there's a lot of pressure on him. They've missed the postseason 3 straight years in St. Louis, which is pretty unheard of.
Not since great. Really
the Tony La Russa era in the 90s started, that they've missed out consistently. I mean, we forget, I think, because we remember back like a month in sports, they fired their manager halfway through the season and still almost got to the playoffs. Obviously missed it by, what was it, 6 or 7 games. But there's been a lot of flux in St. Louis that I don't think they have really solidified that team as much as they needed to. I think offensively they'll be just fine. They need to clean up their defense. They had a really atrocious defense for St. Louis last year. So I think that they're headed in the right direction, but I think very much for the organization, not an individual person, but for the organization, I think it's kind of a playoffs or bust scenario this year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it seems like you know, decent lineup, but really questionable rotation is kind of a National League Central theme here.
Yeah, because, very much.
Because, you know, I'm just looking at the Brewers here, and similar thing there. Christian Yelich, Lorenzo Cain, Yasmani Grandal, Travis Shaw, Moustakas, Jesus Aguilar, Ryan Braun, Eric Thames. I mean, these are guys that you wouldn't necessarily be thrilled about facing as an opposing pitcher. But then when you look at the Brewers pitching staff, the best player on there is, of course, Josh Hader, who's one of the best relievers in the game. But their starting rotation is really, really iffy. Basically no one who's, well, you know, guys like Jimmy Nelson maybe could be good. But, you know, Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, I mean, these are not guys that are going to be launching 20 win campaigns. So I think the Brewers similarly have a weak spot. And I think the interesting thing is maybe this is what Cincinnati was detecting or thinking about when they decided to go out and add a bunch of pitchers to the rotation, thinking, okay, we can't quite compete with these guys in our division on the offensive side of the ball, so let's try to neutralize their advantages by having a strong pitching staff when they don't. So that's why I think they went out and added Tanner Roark, the former National, and Alex Wood and Sonny Gray, these guys who have been having down years as of late, but the Reds obviously saw something in them that they thought they could rehabilitate and turn a weakness into a strength. So the Reds are kind of an interesting question mark for me. They were 67-95 last year. They had a run differential of -123. Not great. I don't think we'll see like, you know, a massive amount of improvement. I don't think they're going to all of a sudden have a winning record. I don't think they're going to be a candidate to win the division, but I do think that they're going to potentially make things interesting and win some games against some of their better equipped division mates in that division. So that'll be good to see, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they had the 24th ERA in baseball last year. I mean, they had to do something. So I'm glad to see they did something. Not strong. I think if you're a Reds fan, based on watching this team over the last 3 to 4 years, this had to be a great offseason for you, in that you know you're not going to win it all this year, but you finally saw that ownership start investing in this team again. I mean, Yasiel Puig and Matt Kemp are nowhere near what they were, you think, about 3 years ago in Los Angeles, but just adding these guys and adding these big bats who could generate some kind of excitement alongside guys like Joey Votto, I mean, there's going to be fireworks in that ballpark, which is it's a historically favorable hitter's ballpark to start with. There's going to be a lot of offense. They're not going to win the division this year, but I think that they're going to have several series down the stretch, probably halfway, three quarters of the way through the season, where they could take 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals or 3 out of 4 from the Cubs and do something to complicate this race enough that the Reds are going to be relevant again. So I think if you're a fan, it had to be good to see in Cincinnati. I think you're probably still 2 years away that they're going to have to offload Puig and Kemp one more time and get some kind of return on those guys. But you got to love what they did with that starting rotation. I really liked adding Sonny Gray, Zach Duke, and Tanner Roark. I think that those are three great pickups for them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm interested to see what Kemp and Puig can do there. Those guys both kind of had resurgences last year, which was fun to watch on the Dodgers, but we'll be interested to watch to see if they can sustain that in Cincinnati. The final team, of course, in this division is the Pirates. I don't have a whole lot to add on here, but I do think the Pirates are a little bit more balanced, even if they're not really high upside. They have some good hitters, Sterling Marte, of course, Corey Dickerson, Gregory Polanco, Adam Frazier, and they have at least a couple of solid anchors for their rotation in Chris Archer, who they picked up from the Rays last year, and Jameson Taillon, who's a fun, young, exciting pitcher to watch, and a cancer survivor too, which is cool. So I think the Pirates are more balanced, but ultimately just a smaller market team, less money to pay players, I think, or at least don't want to spend as much money on players, and they don't have a roster quite as equipped as a Cubs or a Cardinals roster is. So I think if I were lining these teams up for power rankings in the division, Pete, I think I would have to keep Chicago at the top. I think I would put Milwaukee right behind them, and then St. Louis, and then Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. What do you think about that lineup?
Yeah, I actually totally agree with that, which is kind of weird for us that I'll agree with all five of your picks. Man, do you remember after the trade deadline when we talked about Pittsburgh and we talked about them going out to get Chris Archer?
Yeah,
and
of course.
I was saying I was so excited to finally see Pittsburgh ownership do something because they are notorious for not spending money.
Right.
And then just for kicks, as you were talking, I looked up their payroll is $70 million this year.
That's amazing.
Which makes them have a higher payroll than only one other team in Major League Baseball, the Rays. And they've been rebuilding for 30 years in Pittsburgh, it feels like. So at some point, they have to stop just playing this prospect game and hoping that they can have the homegrown talent, the farm system to make them competitive in the NL Central. When you have teams like Chicago, St. Louis, who are willing to break the bank to go after these big free agents, Pittsburgh would never do that. Right. I don't know if that is systemic of ownership, small market. They can't generate enough interest among free agents. But overall, this team just refuses to invest in the present and just continuously rely on the past. And it's really disappointing because that fan base is so loyal in Pittsburgh,
right,
that you think that they could do something, but they're going to have a bad offense this year and a pretty mediocre pitching staff, in my opinion.
Another way to look at that $70 million figure, Mike Trout's new contract has a $36 million average annual value. So that is less than two Mike Trouts.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the 25-man payroll, and this is from spotrack.com. So the 25-man payroll for the 2019 Pittsburgh Pirates is $57.675 million. Compare that to the number one, Chicago Cubs, who, of course, are in their division, $205.5 million. So there is just a little bit of disparity there. The Cubs paying almost four times the amount of money for their guys on their roster. So that's incredible. That disparity in baseball is a problem. And it's especially a problem for Pittsburgh Pirates fans.
Yeah. I mean, it's just got to be so disappointing. I mean, we've all had those years where our team is just not performing, and it's clear that ownership or the GM are playing the long game. But at a certain point, you got to commit and pull the trigger on this year or next year. And there are a couple teams we'll talk about between the AL and NL West that I think are doing that. But it's still, they're going to be relevant in 2020, 2021.
Right.
When do you think the Pirates are actually going to be relevant?
No kidding.
I mean, maybe they have kids in grade school right now that they're targeting.
Yeah, but otherwise, that must be the strategy. It's the only explanation. Well, we should move to the NL West. I think one segue possibility here is to mention that the San Diego Padres actually have a lower payroll than the Pirates. If we're just looking at the 25-man roster payroll. So I mentioned the $57.5 million number for the Pirates. Let me sort. Hold on one more. Okay. Yeah, $57.675 million, $57.257 million for the Padres. And that, get this, that includes the new Manny Machado number. So the $300 million contract that Manny Machado signed, they are granted only giving him $12 million of that this year. So it'll climb over time. But that includes Manny Machado, and they have the second lowest payroll in baseball for their 25-man roster. And this, I think, is just, it speaks to the savviness of A.J. Preller and his team out in San Diego, because they have enough talent, I think, on this roster to put together a bona fide wild card run. Manny Machado was actually giving an interview the other day, and he mentioned, you know, we're going to try to win. We're going to maybe not try to necessarily win the division, but at least a wild card. And people like criticized him, like, what? You're not going to try to go take the division from the Dodgers? And I don't think he was saying that. I think he was just being realistic that they are facing the Dodgers, who have one of the highest payrolls. They have one of the lowest payrolls, and they need to understand what they're actually capable of and understand that the statistics, you know, don't lie, and they don't really have a chance to unseat the Dodgers. But I do think that he's right that the Padres could compete for an actual wild card in the National League. I think that they have done a really good job building these pieces. I didn't love the Hosmer signing last year, but compared to I think what the market is now, I think, you know, that in retrospect actually looks pretty good. And they have some really good but really young, talented guys who are exciting. Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to be holding down the left side of the infield along with Machado. He is actually kind of a Machado-style player, and I think has that talent level. Fran Reyes, Will Myers, of course, Luis Urias. The rotation is going to be a problem, and I think if they don't make it, it's because of the rotation. So, you know, Joey Lucchese or Denelson Lamed, Garrett Richards, not guys who are going to be throwing no-hitters, but if the rotation can at least give them something and they can get some run support, they could be in play for a wild card. And I just think that's an accomplishment given the super low payroll that they have.
Yeah. I think as I was looking at a list of prospects earlier today, as we were getting ready to jump on here, I think the Padres actually probably have the best farm system in baseball just on the way that they've built that. And so that's where I'm okay with them spending a lot of money on a guy like Manny Machado, because you hope that he can build a culture, he can be a little stability there, and you can kind of fit some pieces around him as the pieces evolve. That they're not trying to shoehorn everything in this year and make it work. It is very much a deliberate adding. I mean, you look at guys like Ian Kinsler, who you're not bringing in to be an offensive juggernaut. You're bringing him in to be a solid defender who can add to your offense and help you build a culture. So I really like the way that the Padres are doing it. I love that you called out Fernando Tatis Jr. I think he's going to be great. Overall, I think that this is a 2021 team, most likely. I think they're 2 years away from dethroning. But just like you said, I thought Eric Hosmer and Will Myers were veterans who, if they truly bounce back here in the next year or two, the Padres could really be a lot of fun. And, I mean, they play in what you and I have probably talked about off the air many times as one of the greatest cities in America.
I love it.
Small market. But why wouldn't you want to be in San Diego?
That's what I've been saying too. When people criticize Machado, like, why would you go to San Diego? My question is, why wouldn't you go to San Diego?
Yeah. Have you ever been there?
I would take a pay cut to go play in San Diego. I mean, play in the beautiful sunshine with that sea breeze blowing every day, all day. I mean, come on. It doesn't get much better than that. I've been to the park there. It's beautiful. Just a fantastic town. I absolutely love San Diego.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So I'm high on the Padres next year. I hope that they do something this year to keep themselves competitive. I'd love to see them make a wild card run. I really would. So I'm high on the Padres next year. I'm lukewarm on them this year.
I think that's exactly right. I am high on them this year relative to their payroll.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, how about let's continue on in the National League West here. We'll sort of continue up, I guess, although this might actually be down. I think this next team is probably going to do worse than the Padres, and that's the Giants. So last year, 73-89 was the record. The even year, Magic died. They courted Bryce Harper in the offseason when he was flirting a little bit with Los Angeles, and then San Francisco came in late because it looked like he was still on the market. Looked like Scott Boras was trying to drum up a little bit more interest. So San Francisco came in late, obviously lost out to the Phillies, but at least they made a shot at it or tried to get him. He would have been the most exciting lefty to play for that organization since Barry Bonds. But just look at their roster now, and I'm not super bullish on their chances. Bumgarner's is amazing, but I think his best last performance, or at least the last time I remember him being absolutely amazing and unhittable, was 2014 World Series. Or really the whole playoffs in 2014. He's not the same player that he once was. Out with a freak non-baseball injury. Also, you know, he rides, what is it, dirt bikes he crashed on, or an ATV?
Kind of ATV type thing,
But he's getting older. He's not quite the same pitcher that he was. Buster Posey's starting to hit that early 30s catcher wall that Joe Mauer hit several years ago, and he's just not going to be the same player for much longer, I don't think. Yeah. Crawford, Belt, Panic, maybe Longoria. Those are all fine players, and I think that they'll contribute in the lineup. But outside of them, I'm not really sure who can contribute to a team that wants to compete and deliver something to a city that's used to having a team that's competing. I just don't see it from this team, and same thing with the rotation. I mean, a pretty aging rotation there in San Francisco, and I don't think they're going to be able to do much. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. Interestingly enough, I think the biggest variable is the fact that Bruce Bochy is retiring after this year, and that might be worth a couple games worth of Magic down the stretch. I think they're still going to be probably 12 to 14 games under 500 when it's all said and done. I think that they'll be in the mid-70s in terms of wins is probably what they're looking for. I think they're lucky they missed out on Bryce Harper because they already have so much money committed to guys like Jeff Samardzija and Johnny Cueto, who are doing absolutely nothing for them at this time. Posey's looking old. McCutcheon's gone. I mean, they don't have really any outstanding hitters who are going to terrify pitchers. I mean, day in, day out, you might get onesie twosies here, but when I look at their additions this year, Drew Pomeranz, Cameron Rupp, Cameron Maybin, Solarte, I mean, none of these are inspiring any kind of fear. And you look at some of the guys who could be wild cards, like Hunter Pence, gone. Yep. I mean, it's just, they had to rebuild at some point. They had a good 10 years, so there is zero sympathy coming from me on the status of the Giants. But yeah, overall,
we've watched the Giants win their fair share.
Yeah, it's time for them to commit to the rebuild.
Yeah, and you know, Farhan Zaidi was hired away from the Dodgers. He's now the new head of baseball ops. The Giants sent their GM packing after the season. So I think there is, it's reasonable to expect that there's a little bit of a rebuilding period. Zaidi needs to come in and make the team the way he wants to make the team. And that's just going to take time, realistically. So I think San Francisco fans should be patient, not expect a record above 500 this year. I think they're going to be the weakest team in the West. And that'll be an uncomfortable and unfamiliar place for Giants fans. But I'm sure that Zaidi will turn them around in time. It'll just take some time.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, you want to stick to our last California team before we move on and talk about the mighty Dodgers?
Oh, of course, yeah. I think this division is the Dodgers to lose. And
I agree.
If they don't win it, it's kind of shameful on their part. They have, hands down, the most talented roster. And they have guys coming back like Corey Seager who weren't with them for all of last season or almost all of last season. So Seager needs to come back strong. And then, you know, even their sort of, their non-stars. I mean, there's the stars, right? There's your Cody Bellinger's, your Justin Turner's, your Corey Seager's, but then there's sort of the second tier guys who are also good, like AJ Pollock and Chris Taylor, Max Muncy, who was really good last year.
Yeah.
And that's just a really good lineup to be able to throw against any pitcher. And then you have a pitching staff that includes Clayton Kershaw, one of the greatest pitchers ever to play the game, in my opinion. He's really had a down year last year. Hopefully he'll rebound a little bit. But in reality, he's just getting older, and that's just what happens when you age. Kenley Jansen had some health issues last year, but if we can get a good season from him, or if the Dodgers can get a good season from him, I think they're in good shape, and it really is their division to lose. I expect them to win the division. I expect them to go far in the playoffs. I think if you're a Dodgers fan, certainly if you're a Dodgers front office guy, if you don't find yourself playing in the NLCS, it's not a successful season for you, because this team has that talent level and they really should be there.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only addition I would bring up, besides the ones that you mentioned with guys like AJ Pollock, is bringing in guys like Joe Kelly out of Boston. I think Joe Kelly could do a lot for that rotation. It's going to be weird on opening day not to see Clayton Kershaw as the starter for the Dodgers. Kershaw era is slowly coming to an end.
Sad, isn't it?
I mean, say what you will about his playoff performance. I know that is how we remember these guys unfairly so often, but has there been any other pitcher, certainly on the West Coast, who has had more of an effect over the past 5 or 6 years on the game than Clayton Kershaw? I really hope, and I am not a Dodger fan, I really hope he's healthy again here soon and can do something. But just like you said, the Dodgers need to walk away with this division by 5 or 6 games at least, in order to be comfortable going into the playoffs. I think if they struggle here early on in the season, it's going to get very, very interesting in Los Angeles, because just like you said, if you're not playing in the NLCS, this is a huge failure. I think much like we talked about in St. Louis, the playoff drought, I think in Los Angeles, it is the fact that they keep getting there and they can never get over the hump, that there's a lot of pressure from not only the fans, but the media in Los Angeles to do something.
Yeah.
And that front office has to hear it. Guys like Magic Johnson are absolutely aware of what's going on. And I think we can expect a big house cleaning if they are not wearing rings here at the end of October this year.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. How about we go a little bit east to the city of Phoenix, where the Diamondbacks play? What do you see from the Diamondbacks here? They had a pretty quiet offseason. They traded away their best hitter by far, and now they're left with a lineup with young guys like Ketel Marte, Eduardo Escobar, David Peralta. These guys are all projected to have 2 WAR or greater, but not a single batter based on Zips projections, which is available on Fangraphs. Not a single batter on the Diamondbacks is projected for more than 3 WAR. So a lot of guys who can swing a bat and swing it relatively effectively, but nobody who's going to scare opposing pitchers. And their rotation is similarly uninspiring. I mean, obviously, Zach Greinke, who I think is also past his prime, but certainly a good pitcher. And then some other pitchers, Robbie Ray, Zach Godley, Merrill Kelly, Luke Weaver. I think their pitching rotation, generally speaking, is stronger than their batting rotation. But overall, I think this is a well-rounded but weak team, if that makes sense. So I don't think there's a huge imbalance between pitching staff and lineup, but I think that they're not gonna go very far. I think they'll settle in pretty squarely in the fourth position in the National League West.
Yeah, I think if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you're a little disappointed in how little they got back for Goldschmidt when they traded him away to the Cardinals. That they didn't really clean up on prospects. They didn't clean up on cash. They seemed to kind of give him away, knowing it was a contract year. And so they're not necessarily tanking for this year, but it became very clear that it was more of a long-term investment to start walking around. But they didn't have the people to back up that long-term investment that you see a lot of times. That you, for a guy like Goldschmidt, you would expect them to ask the Cardinals for two of their top prospects and
right.
and two players to be named later, and they just didn't get that. So I think if you're an Arizona fan, you have to be a little disappointed. They certainly are not going to be the worst team in this division. I think that is reserved for the Giants.
Right.
But, you know, looking at the player projections for 2019 here, I don't see anyone projected for a three or a war of three or higher based on what I'm seeing on Zips. And that's just right now. I mean, if you start seeing guys like Luke Weaver start to struggle or Greg Holland, who they picked up, struggling, you have to wonder what is going to be left of this team based on giving away one of the greatest players in their franchise history. Obviously, their franchise has only been around for about 20 years, but one of the greatest guys in their franchise and letting Goldschmidt walk. Mm-hmm. What is going to be left of this team here as a normal 162-game season attrits this team?
So here's a question for you. Do you think the Diamondbacks will fall in ahead of or behind the Padres when it's all said and done at the end of the season?
I think they'll be behind them. Okay. I really do.
I think so too. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think the Padres are trending up and the Diamondbacks are trending down. And I think that'll make the difference.
Yeah.
Okay, final team, the Rockies. I have the Rockies actually settling in the number two spot. So the lineup I have for the National League West, the power rankings, is Dodgers, Rockies, Padres, Diamondbacks, and Giants. And I'm bullish on the Rockies for a couple reasons. One, I'm a huge fan of Nolan Arenado. They just locked him to that extension, so he'll be in Denver for a long time. Charlie Blackmon had a pretty down year last year, but I think he's a good candidate for at least a little bit of a bounce back. Trevor Story, they added Daniel Murphy, your former National.
Yeah, I was excited to see Daniel Murphy go to Colorado.
They signed him to a two-year deal. I think they got him on a bargain as well, because Daniel Murphy had some injury trouble in Washington that really hurt his stock, I think. So they got him on this cheap two-year deal. But I think he'll be able to really contribute. DJ LeMahieu's gone, which I think hurts the Rockies. And the rotation has some question marks, but it also has some big upside that I think could really help them. And they made some big acquisitions on the rotation side that could help them as well. So I think I feel pretty confident about them finishing number two to the Dodgers. I do think there's a possibility they hit some injury trouble. You know, John Gray has his weird case of the yips or whatever it was, like he had in the early part of last year. Some things like that could happen, could go wrong for them, and the Padres could sneak in that number two spot. But I feel pretty confident that the Rockies will lock down the number two and be in the mix for it, be in the discussion for a wild card slot pretty late into the season.
I agree with you that they're going to be in the mix. I don't think I have them in the mix late in the season. I have them as a solid number two, but only a couple games over 500. That I think that is how unbalanced the NL West is going to be this year, like we say every year. So I'm sure that now something's going to change and make me sound like an idiot here. I think the Rockies have a good rotation, not a great rotation, but a good rotation. I just don't see enough to kind of get them over the hump over a long season playing at home in the Mile High City. I think a good rotation becomes a mediocre rotation in that city.
Sure.
I think that they've got some good defensive assets, and I think they've got great offense. But just like we talked about when we were talking about the Cardinals, where you're going to see a lot of offense, or the Reds, you're going to see a lot of offense, are they going to have the pitching to kind of balance that out? Or are they going to put an unfair load on that pitching staff when Charlie Blackmon is a little down, or when Nolan Arenado needs to take a week off because he's hurt or something like that? Right, how are they going to deal with that? Much like I talked about with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think, however, going back to the point about how close, how in the mix they'll be for a wild card slot by the end of the season, I do think that the National League East is going to have some pretty tight wild card races, because all of the candidates for a wild card, I don't see being that far above 500. I mean, and this happened last year in the National League East, right? The Nationals or the Phillies and Braves last year, right?
Yeah. Like
back and forth all season long. Cardinals, Brewers, Cubs. Cubs will probably be fairly high above five, you know, five games above 500 or so. But I see the Cardinals and Brewers potentially being like three games above 500 come late August. Same thing for the Rockies, maybe even for the Padres if they get lucky. So I think that even if you're a couple games above 500 in August, I think you're still in the conversation for a wild card, even if you're not sitting in a wild card slot at that point. I just think that's one of the fun things about the National League that the American League doesn't offer us right now. There's just too much disparity in the American League. But in the National League, we have these teams. We don't have these ridiculous win totals like you have in the American League. They don't beat up on each other. Well, they do beat up on each other, right? So everyone's a lot closer to that middle line, that 500. And that makes those wild card races fun. If they were sitting in the American League, I don't think we'd be having that conversation, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree, especially with the expanded wild card. But the unbalanced schedules absolutely make this a little more interesting, specifically in the National League. That is a great point.
Yeah.
That is a great point.
Anything else we should talk about for National League?
Who you got playing in the NLCS when it's all said and done?
Oh, man. It's a good question. I did say that anything less than the NLCS for the Dodgers is a failure. So I'm gonna go ahead and pencil them in for one of those slots in the NLCS. And then I'm gonna go ahead and say, go out on a limb here and say the Nationals are gonna make it to the NLCS in their first season without Bryce Harper. What do you think about that?
I love that. It was a good question. That's why I asked you first, because I had not formulated my answer and I was trying to buy about 10 seconds to come up with one myself.
All right, what do you got?
I really like the Nationals make it to the NLCS. I don't know if they've got the horses for it. I think that one of the contenders in the National League for the NLCS has to come out of the NL Central. I know we said the Cubs are going to be right up there. For some reason, we didn't spend as much time on them today. I really like this Brewers team. I really see something special. I was not a fan of Craig Counsell when he first took over Milwaukee. I really think he has the ability to get them where they need to be. So I got the Brewers. You and Josh talked me into it. I got the Nationals, NLCS. It's going to be a fun year, I think, in the National League.
I love it. Awesome. I would be so happy if the Brewers made it to the NLCS. I'd be even happier if they made it to the World Series. You may remember me saying that last summer as well.
I do.
I just love the Brewers. I'm not a Brewers fan, but I just love small market teams, and I love it when small market teams have success against big market teams. It's just, it's great. And I mean, the Nationals are a small market team in my opinion. I mean, They play on the East Coast, where a lot of big market teams are, but they're not a baseball city. I mean, that was a new team in that city, you know, a decade and a half ago. What year did they? Was it 2004?
2005. They showed up.
So they haven't. Washington wasn't a. It was, you know, in the day of the Senators, Washington was a baseball town, but since then it was not. And then 2005, the Expos moved to town. So I don't think of it as a big market in the same way that your Boston's and your New York's and your LA's are.
Yeah, I agree. What drives me nuts about Washington sports, and obviously this could be a podcast in of itself, but it's a football town, and you see a couple other cities that are like that, but man, Nationals can be in the hunt in the middle of September,
and nobody
cares. There's going to be one Redskin player who puts something stupid on his Facebook or Instagram, and that'll be the front page story on the Washington Post, is talking about the Redskins.
Or Bruce Allen's latest boneheaded trade.
0-3. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. It is not a baseball town. They're getting there. I think in a way the Capitals probably set them back a little by the Capitals finally having the success they needed, which, I mean, it's a good problem to have when you've got another team winning a championship and diverting attention away. But at the same time, I actually think right now the Nationals are probably the third most popular team in that city, which is hilarious because they've had the most sustained success of any of those teams. The Capitals were down for so long, could never get over the hump.
Right.
Skins are awful. The Wizards are awful. Yep. So it's interesting in these markets that are not historical baseball blue bloods.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit after the Capitals won. I think I asked you who was a bigger sports figure, Alex Ovechkin or Bryce Harper. And like, I think there's a legit debate about who's a bigger figure in DC sports, or at least there was at that time. Now I don't think there's not even a debate because Harper's gone, right? So it's definitely Ovechkin, but...
Yeah.
At the time, then it was like, oh yeah, maybe it's our hockey guy. Like what?
Yeah, and for your sake, I'm interested to see how Bryce Harper makes himself part of that community in Philly. That I don't think he ever did a bad job in DC, but he was never the guy who they talked about doing outreach. I mean, you got guys like Ryan Zimmerman, who's a UVA grad, so obviously he knows the town. He's from Hampton Roads.
Right.
But all these guys who are out starting their own charities, doing their own thing. I hope Bryce does that in Philly and truly establishes the roots that he talked about. He and his wife wanted to settle down and make, because I think that is what makes guys like Mike Trout, Albert Pujols. I mean, you look at so many players on the Cubs who are doing this right now, and that more than anything else builds that culture you so desperately need in baseball to sustain that 160-game grind.
The good news is Bryce Harper has 13 years to figure it out.
he can take his time and do what he wants.
Exactly. All right, Pete, that's all I've got for tonight. You have anything else?
No, that is it. Good to be back on the horn with you. Let's do this every week, my friend.
Sounds great. Next episode, we'll do American League previews. It'll be fun. Thanks so much, Pete. It's good to hop on the horn again, and I'll talk to you for the next episode, American League. To our listeners, thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week. We'll be back with the next episode, American League MLB previews. MLB season's coming up. Get up for it. Have a great week.